Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI.
Welcome, everyone. Today, we're doing a deep dive into what I think has to be one of the most haunting examples of a reverse detective story out there, Patrick Modiano's 1978 novel, Missing Person.
Oh, absolutely. It's pure Modiano. You know, when he won the Nobel Prize back in 2014, the citation specifically mentioned his art of memory and how he evokes these ungraspable human destinies.
That phrase really captures it, doesn't it?
It does. Modiano himself, born right at the end of World War II in 45, he really dedicated his whole career to exploring that ghost landscape of historical trauma, particularly the occupation in France. And this novel, it feels like the absolute core of that exploration.
So our mission today is basically to follow the protagonist, Guy Roland, on this really agonizing quest. He's trying to solve the biggest mystery of all his own identity.
And the book just throws you right in. That opening line, "I am nothing," it hits you immediately.
Yeah. Talk about setting a tone, profound absence right from the start.
Exactly. And it signals straight away, you know, this isn't your standard whodunit. We're in Roman noir territory, definitely. But it's completely flipped on its head.
How so?
Well, the search isn't for a criminal or, you know, some hidden treasure. The search is for the self. Guy Roland, our protagonist, he's defined by this huge gap, 10 years of amnesia, total blank.
Right. But before that void opens up again, he's had this period of stability, hasn't he?
Yes. For 8 years, he's managed to build this meticulous, ordered life, but it's entirely borrowed.
Okay, let's start there then. This temporary stability. He wasn't just drifting. He'd found a kind of lifeline, working for a private detective.
Hutt.
Yes, Hutt. He was everything to Guy, really. A mentor figure, maybe even a bit of a father figure. And crucially, he provided an anchor, an institutional one.
So for a man with no past.
Exactly. Hutt's agency gave him a ready-made professional identity. Guy Roland, the meticulous detective. He got good at it, too, you know. Uncovering other people's secrets. It was almost a way to avoid thinking about the massive hole in his own life.
And then comes the catalyst, the event that changes everything.
Right. Hutt decides to retire. He closes the agency. And just like that, Guy is. Well, he's set adrift.
He doesn't just lose his job, does he? It's much deeper than that.
Oh, completely. It's catastrophic for him. The whole scaffolding of his present identity, the one he's carefully constructed for 8 years, it just collapses. He's forced, really, to face that void again. Alone this time.
It's such a moment of existential crisis, isn't it?
Definitely. He's been playing this role very successfully for 8 years, and now the play's over, the curtain's down, the borrowed name, the job, the routine gone. All he's left with is this skill set.
The detective skills.
Right. That and this overwhelming need to find out who he actually was before he became Guy Roland.
And that's such a powerful hook for us, the listeners, too. You know, you think about it, what does happen when those anchors in your life, your job, your history, even your name, just suddenly vanish?
Mm.
What's fascinating about Guy, though, is how he reacts. He doesn't just fall apart. He applies his professional discipline inward.
He does. He sort of weaponizes his detective training, but turns it on himself. He knows the methods.
Oh.
Track down witnesses, check old addresses, scrutinize documents.
But what does he have to work with?
Almost nothing. That's the tragedy of it. Just these hazy, fragmented memories that sometimes bubble up without warning. The old address book, maybe water damaged, a couple of faded photos. That's his arsenal.
So the investigation isn't against some external enemy?
No, not at all. It's a battle against the void in his own memory. It's this slow, painstaking process of reconstruction, trying to layer these potential identities, these conflicting clues, onto the blank slate he's become.
Okay, let's shift focus a bit, because this investigation pulls us right into Modiano's signature setting, post-war Paris. The city itself feels like a character here.
Absolutely. It's like this vast, melancholic archive. It holds all these memories, but they're often locked away, hidden behind closed doors.
You can really feel that atmosphere.
You can. And Guy's methodical. He's going through old phone directories, visiting addresses that lead to shuttered storefronts, those Rue des Boutiques Obscures, the Street of Dark Shops.
The title itself,
Exactly. And they're such powerful symbols, aren't they? These dark shops represent those inaccessible corners of history, the memories people don't want to revisit, the secrets everyone just wants to keep buried.
It's like he's literally ghost hunting in the city's architecture.
That's a great way to put it. And as he follows these faint trails, he starts to uncover these spectral figures, people who knew the man he used to be. Their names alone tell a story, very cosmopolitan, rootless, hinting at life during the occupation.
Who are the key figures he uncovers?
Well, the first, and maybe the most crucial, is Denise Coudreuse. She sort of emerges from the mist of the past as this beautiful, enigmatic young woman.
The great love.
Seems like it. The lost love, definitely. She appears in fragments and photos, always just slightly out of reach. She feels like the emotional heart of his lost past.
And then there's the man he might have actually been.
Right. Several names pop up, but the main one seems to be Jimmy Pedro Stern, or maybe Pedro McAvoy. It's confusing. He sounds like a real chameleon. Possibly Greek-Jewish origin, using a dubious Dominican passport. Someone who knew how to navigate occupied Paris, probably through, well, through flexibility and maybe some deception.
This is like he was part of a specific circle.
Yes, this quite glamorous but incredibly precarious group. People like Freddie Howard Deleuze, Gay Orlow, they lived on the edges, you know? Inhabiting this world of late night cafes, maybe black market dealings. It's depicted as this sort of elegant dance right on the edge of disaster.
And the investigation itself, it has this repetitive, almost frustrating rhythm to it.
It does. It's designed that way, I think. He finds a new lead, an address. He tracks down some elderly witness whose memory is fading. And he gets another snapshot, another piece of the puzzle, but it often contradicts the last piece.
One person remembers Pedro as charming. Another thinks he was dangerous.
Exactly. And what's really fascinating is how Modiano links that personal fragmentation, Guy's own fractured memory, to the wider social context.
You mean France's relationship with the occupation?
Precisely. Guy's individual amnesia feels like a perfect metaphor for France's collective historical amnesia, that reluctance to fully confront the complexities of the war years, collaboration, survival, the moral compromises. It's all stuff people preferred not to talk about for a long time.
So the characters he's uncovering, Denise, Pedro, Freddie, they're all survivors.
Survivors of some kind of catastrophe, yes. They embody that sense of displacement, the need for secrets. You have to remember, during the occupation, identity wasn't fixed. It could be a tool, a currency, something you changed or forged or threw away if it meant staying alive.
Which makes Guy's search even harder, right?
Absolutely. He's looking for a solid truth, a fixed identity, but maybe the man he was searching for was already a construct, shaped by the intense pressures of wartime. Perhaps that solid truth never really existed in the first place.
So he follows this trail through Paris, hitting dead ends, getting contradictory stories, and then the investigation takes a turn geographically.
Yes, the focus shifts away from Paris. The trail leads him to Megève, the ski resort in the Alps.
Which wasn't just for skiing during the war, was it?
No, not at all. It was a place of refuge, a hiding spot for people trying to flee occupied France, often towards Switzerland. And it's here, in Megève, that Guy finally gets a clearer picture of the actual physical trauma he suffered.
Okay, tell us about that. What does he learn happened to Pedro and Denise?
He finds a witness who remembers this tragic escape attempt. It was deep winter, 1943, a brutal blizzard. Pedro and Denise were trying to cross the border into Switzerland.
Together?
Together, but they got separated in the storm. And the man, Pedro McAvoy, he was shot during the crossing, suffered a severe head wound.
Wow. So there it is, the physical cause of the amnesia.
Plausible, right? A traumatic brain injury. The violence of that moment literally blasted his past away, making it perhaps permanently inaccessible.
That's devastating.
Yeah.
But then, there's more to it, isn't there? The picture of Pedro that emerges isn't straightforward.
No. And here's where it gets really interesting, morally complex. Because this revelation about the shooting comes alongside clues about Pedro McAvoy's activities before the escape attempt.
What kind of activities?
Things like document forgery, maybe involvement in the black market. It suggests he wasn't some noble resistance hero whose lost memory we should mourn unequivocally. He was operating in that murky, moral gray zone. Survival through ambiguity, maybe ethical flexibility rather than clear-cut heroism.
That completely changes the nature of his quest, doesn't it?
It throws everything into question. If he had been a hero, recovering that past would feel noble, almost romantic. But discovering he might have been this ambiguous, perhaps compromised figure, guy has to confront the question, do I even want to recover this person? Is this past worth reclaiming?
It adds such a layer of doubt. Is it better maybe to leave some doors closed?
Exactly. And you feel Guy's frustration so strongly. Modiano captures it brilliantly, that feeling of being, you know, on the verge of remembering. And then suddenly a door slams. The staircase collapses.
Like grasping at smoke.
Precisely. He gets tantalizingly close, only for the structure of memory itself to just crumble.
Which leads us towards the end of the novel. Mm. And the resolution, if you can call it that, is famously low-key. It resists easy answers.
Very understated. There's no sudden flood of memory, no dramatic Hollywood moment where everything clicks into place.
So what happens instead?
It's more like a gradual, quiet acceptance. Guy seems to realize that piecing together the past completely, making it whole and coherent, is just impossible and maybe undesirable.
And the investigation itself transforms.
Yes. The search, which started as a way to find an identity, has become his identity. The process of searching for Pedro McAvoy has paradoxically solidified the existence of Guy Roland.
There's that final act, though. It feels like acceptance, but also something else.
Hope. Desperation. It's hard to say. He finds one last address in that old address book, somewhere incredibly distant, Bora Bora in French Polynesia.
What does he do?
He sends a telegram. Just sends it off into the void, to this address. It's this final, poignant gesture, like casting a fishing line one last time into the vast ocean of the past.
And the book ends there, suspended.
Yes. We never know if there's a reply. The question hangs in the air. But in that uncertainty, there's also a choice. He seems to choose the present, the agency he has now as Guy Roland, over the murky, painful, perhaps unrecoverable ghost of Pedro McAvoy.
Okay, let's try to pull together some of the main threads here. Thinking about the lasting impact of the novel, the biggest theme has to be about identity, right?
Oh, absolutely. Identity and self-construction. What's fascinating is Modiano's take on it. He suggests identity isn't some fixed, essential core waiting to be discovered.
It's more fluid.
Much more fluid. Fragmented, even. It's a narrative we build, not just from our own memories, which are unreliable anyway, but from documents, from photographs, from what other people remember about us, even when those recollections contradict each other. Guy's whole journey shows that identity is something negotiated, constructed, rather than simply found.
And running alongside that, there's this deep sense of melancholy.
Yes, the melancholy of lost time. The whole book feels like an act of mourning. Mourning for individuals, yes, but also for a lost world, that wartime generation, their lives, their elegance maybe, all extinguished by historical brutality. Everything Guy encounters seems to be fading, shrouded in the fog and twilight that Modiano evokes so well.
Let's talk about that style. How does he create that atmosphere?
He's a master of it. The first-person narration, looking back, gives the prose this very precise yet restrained feel. It's quite minimalist in a way, but incredibly evocative.
You really feel the fog, the half-light.
You do. And the photographs are so important, these frozen moments that promise answers but ultimately remain ambiguous. He also uses this technique of almost documentary realism, real street names, real cafes, specific details.
Which grounds it.
Exactly. It grounds this deeply existential, almost dreamlike quest in a very tangible reality. It makes the internal crisis feel incredibly real.
And that refusal to give us a neat ending, a clear solution, that's key to its power, isn't it?
Absolutely. It shows us that some mysteries, whether they're historical or deeply personal, they just resist easy answers. They remain unsolved. And that's perhaps the most realistic thing about it.
So thinking about its legacy, what's the final takeaway?
Well, I think the work really shifts our perspective. Guy Roland's condition, his amnesia, might seem extreme, but Modiano suggests it's really just a heightened version of the human condition for all of us.
How so?
We all have gaps in our stories, right? Things we've forgotten, parts of ourselves or family histories that are lost or unclear. The novel highlights the inherent fragility of identity for everyone.
That's a really powerful thought, that his extreme situation reflects something universal.
And it suggests that maybe the real dignity isn't found in arriving at the perfect answer, the complete story. Maybe it lies in the search itself, the sustained, often difficult effort to understand.
That quiet lesson feels very relevant today. That the grace is in the pursuit, even if the final truth remains elusive.
Exactly. The human spirit keeps seeking connection, keeps trying to construct meaning, even when it feels like you're starting from nothing.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.